This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration. Collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
What a privilege it was to talk to my next two guests, Edward Watts and Wad Al-Hatib. We talk about their new film, For Sama, and this is a brilliant piece of documentary filmmaking, a brilliant piece of storytelling. It's journalism, it's narrative, it's human, and it's raw, and it's real. It's some of the most honest and authentic filmmaking I think I've ever seen, and it's a must see. It's a documentary that people will be writing essays about, and people will be going back to for quite some time. It seems to me it won the Grand Jury Best Doc Feature and also Best Audience Feature at South by Southwest this year. It's going to be premiering as well here in Canada at Hot Docs coming up very soon. And look for it getting a theatrical release. And if you can't get it there, and you're listening to this way beyond the actual theatrical and Hot Docs, look for it online, video on demand. This really is about something that's so explosive and so simple, this raw, this human, this real experience. It's about the strength of the human spirit. It's about courage, and it's about making choices and responsibility. It's about just how to be a better human, and giving us a lens, a way to step into somebody else's story in a way that I think you've never seen before. It's about justice and about building towards a better future, and about being an activist and rolling up our sleeves and getting involved in some way, shape, or form. And I think you're going to be convicted and engaged in the conversation, but more importantly, in the film. So definitely check that out. Coming right up, Wad Al-Hatib and Edward Watts talking about their new film, For Sama. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and writing, and you can get a hold of me there. And face-to-facelive.ca. Don't forget, we've over 400 interviews with filmmakers and writers and philosophers and comedians and magicians talking about, social change in one way or another, and conversations about things that matter, where film ideas and social change meet face to face. You can support us on Patreon. You can also leave a quote or a review for us on iTunes. I would certainly appreciate that. Share it with your friends. Sign up for our newsletter. If you want to advertise on Face to Face, you absolutely can do that as well. Reach out to us. We'll make sure that happens and get back to you. And also rabble.ca for more interviews and blogs and posts about things that matter. Coming right up, Wad Al-Hatib and Edward Watts talking about their new film, Forsama.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here with us today on Face to Face Live. We have Wad Al-Khatib with us and Edward Watts, the directors of the new film Forsama, going to be here at Hot Docs in Toronto in the next few days. Thank you to you both for joining me here on Face to Face.
Thank you for having us, David.
Thank you, David. Thanks.
So, before we step into talking about the film and some of the history behind it and some of the challenges you guys both must have faced, first I want to say congratulations and thank you for such a brilliant, engaging and challenging film that allowed. I mean, I honestly, Wad, Edward, I felt privileged to be a part of this story and. I think this one's going to resonate with me for a long, long time. So congratulations and thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. I mean, to have such kind words from you, yeah, it means a lot.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we wanted from the film more than any, like, awards or any, like, participation. It's about the people, how the human reaction.
Yeah.
How could they really understand the point of the film and the message that we want to reach out.
So speaking of awards, can one of you tell us a little bit about the most recent one, South by Southwest?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great honor, but our world premiere was at South by Southwest in March, and we were privileged enough to win the Grand Jury prize for Best Documentary Feature, and then we also won the Audience Award for Best Documentary Feature, which was incredible. But I mean, as Wad says, like, the award was amazing. We were so grateful. But what was more special in a way was just to see how the audience responded. We had a South by Southwest crowd, I'm sure, like the Hot Docs crowd, was a wonderful, welcoming audience. We got a standing ovation, which was like unheard of. We were both like crying at one point, and because to see that response from people.
And I was very worried about how the people will react, because I know that the film is very tough film, is very sensitive, and it has a lot of maybe bad things to watch. So I was very expecting that some people will be like, will leave the film before it will finish. And I was very,
so
very
tough,
surprised how people were amazing with the reaction. And that's actually what was explained when we got the audience award. Also, it was really, really amazing.
Yeah, I bet. Well, congratulations on that, and I hope that's the beginning of a long list of awards and great audience reaction and great Q&As and standing ovations to come. Let's hope for that. Let's trust for that. Before we really get into sort of the film, tell us a little bit about the production itself and who was involved to actually make this happen, to get this film up there on the screen for us to see.
Actually, this film is amazing, like cooperation between many, many great, let's say, a production company, which is like, it was first from Channel 4 News with RTM production for Channel 4 and BBS Frontline. And these, like, amazing different teams from different, like, backgrounds, from different, like, experience, make the film really, really, actually, as I really want it to be.
Yeah, they were so supportive to us throughout the process. I mean, it was a very, obviously, Wad had been filming for 5 years in Aleppo. And then the process of after she left Aleppo and putting the film together, it was 2 years. It was a long journey, a big evolution. Mm. And those guys stuck with us through the whole journey. They supported us all the way. They gave us the space that we needed to try and, find the film and find the film as it finally is. So.
And maybe this is the point when we can really say thank you for them.
Yeah, big thanks to them.
And for letting us do what I really do believe, what should be reach, like, the people outside, and the unusual process that they all were very supportive and helpful to, like, just give us all the, like, the power to do whatever we really believe in.
So five years of shooting and 2 years of editing, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
So how did the two of you find each other?
Actually, I was filming all this, like, footage through the years without a very a clear point or plan of what I will do in this process. So I was just like trying to record each moment and each like things happening in Aleppo, as I was expecting that I will not be survived. And when I, in 2016, I was working for Channel 4 News in Aleppo, and they broadcast a really great news reports at Inside Aleppo. It's called all like in one series called Inside Aleppo. And when I left Aleppo in 2016, in December, I came to London in first of 2017, and I met with Naveen, which is one of the exec producers. And she introduced me to Ed and Siobhan. Siobhan, she's also like an executive producer for Channel 4.
Because these guys knew I was obsessed with Syria. And I've been, you know, always saying, like, we need to see more on Syria. We need to do this and that. And I'd made a film about ISIS and stuff. And so when WAD appeared, and they said to you, because no one knew, I think, like, the WAD had all this, like, incredible archive, right? It was a surprise.
Channel 4 News recognized that there's a lot of things, but we had no idea what could we do in these things. And then when we met all, like, four of together, we felt that, you know, we discussed some ideas, and then we said, no, no, there is, should be, like, a process to actually have the decision what we should do in this. And then we, like, start this process of watching everything, and then, like, start like thinking what the line that we are should working on and what the ideas, what anything could be.
Wad, when you started recording back in, when was it? I guess around April. I think I find it interesting. April 29th, 2012.
I started very early, like when the revolution started. I first was like participate as a protest. As a professor with the demonstrations in Aleppo University, and I like with many like as many activists there, I was starting recording everything like as demonstrations, protests, stands, anything could just like give the feeling that there is a revolution was happening in Syria as a like response for the regime who was like saying that there's nothing happening in Syria. They denied everything was happening.
Right.
So the only like thing I could do is just like to document these things.
Was there a desire, would you say, were you driven by this sense of not just activism and journalism, but this was about somehow telling the real story? I mean, certainly after watching Fursama, that is a conclusion I think I could easily make. But when you started recording, were you aware of sort of where this story might head? Did you realize the implications of what it was you were doing at the time?
Actually, there was like no plan for what I'm doing, but the only thing that I felt is that I'm living now this very like unique things which I've never expected to have before, and I felt that this is the only way to fight for like my belief, for my like better future. And like through the years I wasn't have any like idea or any feeling of what I will do in this, but the only thing that was, this is what make me alive, and this is what make me, there's a reason for being there to document the people life there, and this is the only way to actually really like fight for what I really believe in.
And that's exactly what I think we have in this film. You know, you put your finger on it in the sense of it is the truth, really. What WAD captures is this human truth, free of like any political, you know, twisting or any attempt to color the narrative. It is this like raw human experience. And you know, what we settled on in the end was just this feeling that you are WAD through this film. You lived in Aleppo, basically.
And the first like time when I really decided like I really should turn like the record on through all the, in every day, in every moment, in every like event, whatever was happening, was when I lost one of my close friends. I was like recording a lot, and all the people around me say like, stop filming all the time, we don't need the camera all the time, and they feel uncomfortable in anything we are doing while the camera was there. And then when we lost this friend, we really like find out that no, we should have like record everything from the beginning. And that's why I still like they record on all the time until like the very end.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you did for so many reasons. And I honestly think history will look back at this film as being a bit of a watershed moment for a lot of different reasons. You know, Wad, you shot.
I hope so.
I believe it. I truly believe it. So you shot. You have a great shot near the beginning of the film of, I'm going to guess they're students. I think you're at the university, and they're spray painting some I guess statements of about freedom on the walls, and I think they used the line or something to the effect of we're overthrowing the government on the walls. And is that the sense that you had when you were filming? This was an act of resistance. You were pushing back. You were rebelling by capturing these images, knowing that maybe, just maybe, I'm going to be able to tell this story one day.
Yeah, actually, I failed in the beginning of the revolution to do the news like reported in these things. And at that time, like, you shouldn't be speak when you are filming anything. You shouldn't be like filming and participating in the same time in the protest. Because if you publish anything and you were like part of the local like channels, which they are controlling, like, it's not control, but it's kind of controlling how this material should be out for the other like people around the world. So one of my like cousin told me, if you want to film and you want to publish this videos, you shouldn't be part of the protest, but you should be around. You shouldn't be like speak while you are filming. And I felt it's very hard for me because like the exciting of being in middle of revolution, I couldn't like really didn't do this. So I know that at that time I failed in the most important things to do as like delivery the news out of the country, but I felt that one day this will be very important. So as you can see in that moment or many other moments around, I was just like documenting everything, whatever it was, as like this is my life, our life, the life that we would like to have as Syrians.
Edward, you know, you used a phrase. You used the phrase "raw human experience," and I think I've already sort of described the film to a few people, to my wife Elizabeth, and there's something for me that, you know, at times it was difficult to watch. There's no question. These are hard images. But they're real images, and this is going on around us each and every day in a variety of different ways. And so I said to my wife this morning, I said, this might be one of the most human films I've ever seen.
That's just the best thing to hear, and I'm so glad as well to hear you say that you feel it could be a watershed moment in history, because I think that is, you know, it is an extraordinary piece. What Wad managed to do and what she's captured is a universal humanity in a part of the world where, you know, it's so often filtered through these media perceptions and the manipulation of some of the parties that are involved in the conflict that wanted to categorize what was going on in Syria as a bunch of terrorists fighting against the government, you know. And I think this, you know, what Wad has achieved in her filming is like, it is an act of resistance. You know, it shatters the propaganda completely because you realize as an audience, as you're describing, these people are completely recognizable to me. Yes. You know, this is my friend. Those are my neighbors. This is my daughter, or, you know, that's my mother, or that's my child. And yet here is a human that I recognize being subjected to this incredible violence. Why? Because they were fighting for core principles that we all share of human dignity and human freedom. And so it's explosive because it's so simple and so human.
And for me too, like, it's very hard to me to judge what I did exactly, because like I lived this and I went through this experience, and I love these people. I lived with them. We shared a lot of like amazing moments, even if it was very hard or very like beauty. But this is all like was my life, and it was really hard for me to judge, is that okay or good or not good. And as many like people who were like in Aleppo just filming, didn't expect what the reaction of this will be, or what we will have like when people will see this. But now I really felt that, yeah, I did like really good things, and I hope that this film will not just be like as a film, or I don't want this awards to be just awards. I really want like to have real reaction who can could really change people's life, not just in Syria. Now in Syria, because it's, for me, the most important things. But I also want, like, people's lives in all places, like, finish. I don't want to be very, like, dramatical to see, to say these things, but I really want, like, not just the war to stop. I want everyone to have, like, the justice that we really want. We want a free Syria without al-Assad regime, without these, like, allies with, like, Russians or Iranian. Not just in Syria, but I'm giving just an example for a very bad, like, fascist, like, government and criminals around the world to let this lie, these people have their lives as they want without any, like, control.
And, yeah, and that's, I mean, that's it. I really hope that a film like this does wake people up to what we've allowed to happen on our watch, you know, and that a bit like you're saying, those things are still going on. I mean, it's still happening in Syria. You know, Wad and I are constantly tracking what's happening in a part of Syria called Idlib, where they're still bombing and still shelling. Children are still being killed.
And again, the same story again, that, like, Russian and the regime threaten these people to be displacement out of the last part of Syria, which people could just, like, leave safe without anything.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's I mean, there's so much there. I mean, honestly, we're not going to have enough time to get into it. Often when I do interviews and around, particularly around great films, I mean, there's just so many places you could go. But I want to talk about a couple things, like the human component of this, the thread that runs throughout it. How you managed to you got me to empathize with everyone in the film, and I mean everyone. I mean, I was Uwad at certain points. I was Hamza at certain points. I was some of the people on the street. I mean, it's really quite remarkable what you've done with the editing and with clearly little attempt at comedy here. Clearly, no CGI. You know, this is you couldn't get more gritty, and yet you've allowed me to step into that. And I think that's what's so wonderful about great film and storytelling, and it's just such a brilliant gift. But I was going to say the one scene in particular. There's many, but the children playing in the water and the streets of, I'm assuming it's Aleppo, of the bombed out streets and the broken stone and the concrete and the rebar, and there they are playing in the water, or the comedy, you know, the comedic moment of your friends at the hospital warming their hands on a shell that has just exploded into the building. I mean, the absurdity of that, and yet, you know what, I think that's kind of something I might have done too, you know what I mean?
That's the human spirit, those sequences. Like the guys, we love the scene of the guys playing chess, where they're
the
sitting around, you know.
Chess is wonderful. Wonderful
in the
scene.
Shadow of that bomb building. And like,
and actually, like, at that moment, I can't feel anything amazed with this, because, like, I lived there through these people. I saw this all the time, and I felt that this is the normal life that we were living.
Normal,
And exactly, like, it's the human being how could use to anything around, like, the world, just, like, to live, to say survive without these, like, things. We couldn't be, like, still alive until now. We couldn't tell this story. And these people are amazing, you know, like, not just, like, the people who were in the film, but the whole people who were in Aleppo, who tried to, like, still fight for their life, for their survive. They are really, really amazing. And maybe this is the time to tell them, like, I own them, like, all the nice and the beauty things that we lived in Aleppo. And I, like, really would love, like, to, I don't know, like, and thank you. It's very, very small, like, word to say, to tell to any people who were, like, in Aleppo, the white helmet, the last corner, the everyone who was, like, the doctors, not just in the hospital that I filmed in, but in the whole hospitals who were, like, just trying to treat people and let them survive. All the activists, all the journalists, like, there's really, like, and countless people to say thank you for them.
And that's, and you know, the thing that is in the footage is exactly, I think, the truth of, like, the human spirit, basically. Like that opening scene, you see, like, it's such an incredible thing to see a hospital being bombarded, and then just as the bombardment stops, everyone starts cracking jokes and like, you're mocking each other and joshing with each other. And that is, you know, that's what human beings do, even in those most unbelievably strained and brutal circumstances.
And Ed, isn't Sama also playful at that point? Doesn't she throw her bottle down and, like, kind of like with a little tongue in cheek?
I mean, Sama is Sama, I say, I don't have kids, but Sama, the kids that I know, she's very unusual one, you know? She, like, that line in the film, she's special. She's so special. Like, yeah, she's an extraordinary. Yeah. She had that sense of humor, it seems, right from that early, like that shot of when she's like, what is she, 1 month? When she starts pretending she can't hear you and starts laughing. Like,
3 months,
You know, that's...
And like Naya is like two, you know, like...
Naya's the daughter of Salimena.
Like now she's 5 years, but when she was there, like she was three and four. And she was like really understanding everything in very like shocked way. Like,
yeah.
As when she said like Aleppo is gone, you know, like... She's just like...
She's wiping her mom's tears as well. Mm.
She, like, these children who really, like, let us really, like, you know, I don't know, bear everything for the best future for them.
Yeah.
Zen and Wissam, too, and, like, the other people who were, like, painting the bus. They are all really amazing, like...
Yeah.
And they are the usual people, like, usual kids in Aleppo, you know? As,
standard, yeah. They're not, like, special ones. Yeah. I think that's the thing that we always say about, like, WAD, you know, and this relates to the broader context, like... Wad and Hamza, they aren't the normal Syrian people. They're not like, you know, this is what normal Syrian people were like. And they're the norm, you know, and the extremists and the people that people in the media focus on, they're the unusual ones. They're the like outliers, basically.
Thank you, Ed.
So, Wad, at one point in the film, near the end of the film, I think I think the shot was something Hamza was talking to a news channel, and you talked about how these images were getting out into the world, stories were being told and are still being told, and films like this and so on. And you narrate, the translation is "no one does anything." And I've often, you know, I've worked in international development for years and have daily kind of come up against these unjust, you know, stories from around the world. I've done a lot of work in Cambodia and Mongolia and different places and so on. I mean, this seems such, like such a trite, simple question, but, you know, how does it happen? Like I was reflecting on Syria and just even this morning thinking, if I lived about 80 to 100 kilometers north of the city of Toronto, and let's just place Aleppo in there instead, would I have really known what was going on, you know? And how engaged would I even really be? Does that make sense? Am I sort of... Anyway, I know there's no real short answer to it, but I would love to hear your thoughts, both of you.
I really would love to have to take this film and go to first, like, to the United Nations and go to, like, really see the, like, I don't know, but, like, people from the Russian government, people, like, I know, like, the Syrian government and Syrian regime, like, you can forget about them because they are not human beings. But, like, the Russian government, all the Western, like, you know, governments who can really, like, affect and, like, play a very good role in this, like, things. We are 2000 and, like, now 19, you know, and this is things still happening. I really want them to watch this and watch just their faces if they can really feel anything through this. I can't. Actually, I don't know. I
mean,
there's no words, actually.
I think, you know, I think what we feel, like, coming to it from the Western point of view, and what you learn from looking at the film and Wad's story is just the fact that we sort of think you can't just sit by anymore in this world, you know, but we think that we can. Or we're reluctant to kind of, I don't know, make sacrifices. This is my personal view. We're as like cultures, as governments in the West, you know, we're reluctant to make sacrifices to diminish our own situation in order to help people who live thousands of miles away. But I think, you know, all of us, we all have something at stake in the conflict in Syria, you know, and it's partly an understanding thing. People just don't get that. And so they think, why should I make a sacrifice? Why should I take a risk to help these people? And it's that apathy or that reluctance for us to kind of stand with people like Wad and Hamza that has actually led all of our societies into the complex messes that they're in now. So much can be traced to what happened in Syria.
And actually, like, in 2016, especially, like, the last month when we didn't know exactly what will happen before, like, they said that they have the great solution as a displacement. But in that month, like, we were watching all, like, the people around the world who were, like, having demonstrations just, like, to save Aleppo, save these people. And that's actually what makes us really feel that, no, there is hope in this world, and these people around the world really care about the other people, the other human being in another place. And I really like with many people who thought in Aleppo, like we own these people, our lives, we own them, because without their protests, without their like actions, we will never be like alive and going out. But if I want to ask what the people who have the power and the authorities do, they just like have the solution of let us displacement out, you know, let the regime control
the regime do what it wanted.
Exactly what they want, but they didn't give us the solution to be, you know, like safe in our homes, in our country. And like I can't actually, I'm still very shocked, because we are 2019, and in this moment exactly I should rise up my daughter in principles of freedom and democracy, or like
dignity,
caring, taking care about other people, while I know that there's maybe like no point of let her like grow up on these things, because these things is not still exist. So I'm very, I don't know, I don't want to be very like desperate about these things, but we should really find out how we could really think of better future for our like kids at least.
You know, there's a part near the end of the film too, I think, just to echo both of what you're saying, if I hear you correctly, Hamza said something about everyone having a role. And we have a role to play in not only our own future and our family's future, but the communities we live in the globe. I mean, it sounds kind of, you know, crazy out there and lofty, but it really is true. The decisions we make, the clothes we buy, the people we vote for, the petitions we sign, how we actively get involved, it actually does make a difference. And I think that's one of the many things I love about this film, is it's really about responsibility and about choice, and that, to Hamza's point, we all have a role to play.
Yeah, and what I mean, you guys made the toughest choice imaginable, which was to risk not only your, like, you know, these guys took the courageous decision, and I think more of us around the world need to start taking the courageous decision in all the different aspects of, you know, life that we all face, in whatever particular challenges or conflicts are relevant to us, you know, whether it be in Toronto or Aleppo. You know, everyone is like facing significant decisions which can, you know, without sounding over dramatic, the fate of the human race kind of depends on people taking the courageous decisions. And, you know, Wad and Hamza are a great inspiration to us all in that.
And like, there's like some people around the world who are like, they are not just, they don't care, not just because they don't want to care, because they don't have the chance to see how this life could be. So like I do believe that this film, as like many of other films, we should still like go to people, let them watch this kind of things, speak to them, like tell them about something they don't know that it's happening in this world. And that's exactly what like one of the people who said like, what's Aleppo? And he's one of
He was like a guy running for office, a senator or something in America.
In American government. So he said, what's Aleppo? Like, he is the wrong man to be in this position, who they don't know what's happening in Aleppo while you are in the US, like one of the big governments who like interfere in the whole world. So like, we really need people to be engaged. We really need people to know what is really happening.
Yeah,
maybe
it could be us. It could be. I remember being in Toronto and seeing like a great piece on the local news where they were like, imagine if Toronto was Aleppo. And I mean, I don't know the geography of that Toronto very well, but they were sort of like, yeah, everything to the east of this side of the freeway or whatever it was would be being under siege and bombarded. And we need more stuff like that to understand, like, there but for the grace of God go we.
And I feel some shame sometimes when I heard any story like that was happening through the years that I was very busy in my life in Aleppo, and I didn't care, or I didn't know that what was happening. So I really believe that the human being, which they are in this planet now, they could change, like, not just their life, they could change, like, the whole universal.
All of our fate,
All the universal life.
All human race, exactly.
But we just need the engaged.
Yeah.
We need to be engaged, absolutely. And then I think we need to do something about it, whatever the heck that is. But yeah, the idea of a politician in one of the world's most powerful governments not even knowing where Aleppo is seems unconscionable to me. It seems like beyond reproach.
Well, yeah. It's or just, what it was.
Yeah,
or what it, or
I
what
think
it
the guy
was.
Thought Aleppo was a person. You
right.
know, it's like, who is
Got
Aleppo?
It.
I think that's what he said.
Wow.
Who is Aleppo?
And actually, for a response for this, I took a summer for a symmetry. And I published before, and I was very like attacked because of this picture. That why you are using your child in political things or war things? But it's something bigger than this idea about how you use your child in a war. But
yeah.
This man who could really change our life, he just doesn't have any idea what Aleppo means.
Mm.
And I just I wrote on this sign as this is Aleppo. What's justice?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's you. That's the end of the film, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The picture at the end. Yeah. That was in response to this guy.
Right? Oh wow, wow. You you really are an activist, Wad. It's fantastic. You're.
Oh my God, she's such an activist. she's a.
I can hear
nothing she is not.
I can hear the.
I have a lot of power. I still have.
Yeah.
Now, the new battle is Brexit. I'm coming.
Brexit.
just let me finish this film. I'm going for the Brexit.
I told her she arrived in London just for our revolution.
The new battle is Brexit. Yeah, there you go. That's the next. Is that the next film?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I can hear, and by the way, Wad, I know you know this, but I can hear your passion and your purpose and your commitment and your energy come out in all of this. It's really, really quite remarkable. So, sadly, we're going to have to wrap up in a few minutes, but I do have a couple more things I'd love to chat with you guys about. Wad, you say near the end of the film that you only see the color red. And then you go on to kind of, I think, sort of raise the bigger question about, you know, would I do things the same way if I knew, you know, what I know now? Would I still do what I did? Would I still have made the same decisions? And I think, you know, this for me it was such a moment for me because it really helped to situate me in your shoes to say what kind of a decision would I have made? You know, would I have stayed? Would I have rolled up my sleeves and so on? So I'd love to hear about that. You talk about the trauma and you say even if you don't recover. So yeah, I just wondered if you might be able to tell us a little bit more about that sense even now, you know, 7 years after you started filming your first images.
I will answer in another way, which I was yesterday coming back here in one taxi with a guy, and he was telling me what was happening is very awful, it's very bad, and I wish nothing was happening in Syria and you stay safe and everything was as it was. And I was just very angry inside myself that no, that's not what we really need. There is a heavy price, and that's what I really do believe in for everything you do in your life. There's a price, and the price of having a free country after 40 or 50 years of corruption and I can't describe everything was happening in Syria in one word, but all these awful years with I don't know what to say, but it's not a criminal regime, but now it's a criminal regime, and he was trying to build all these things to make the Syria as a farm for his group.
For his family.
Yeah, for his family and for his group. And now nothing could be as it was, whatever the situation was now, but it's better than what we lived through and what we could have been still until now. So I just do believe that this battle and this revolution will happen now or later, but sooner is really better.
Edward, is this the story when you first met Wad and started to see the footage? Is this the story you thought you were going to land on as, you know, director, editor, and I guess, you know, storyteller?
I think It's an interesting one. The exact form of the story, the exact construction of how it unfolds was, you know, it took us a long period of evolution of, you know, Wad and I just like coming together, I guess, and understanding each other and understanding each other's perspective and going on a journey into her material. I mean, I knew like from the beginning that we had this incredible human vision of, you know, not only what the truth about Syria was, but also the truth about the female, a female perspective on conflict and the perspective of children and families, something that was quite universal. So that was very clear to me from the beginning. But, you know, how to actually tell it in a way that engaged an audience, kept them gripped, you know, kept the emotions moving through the different like palette of emotions as well, the light, the dark, what we've talked about, the way that humor follows hard on from horror.
Sure.
That was a long and complicated process to find the right place, you know, and to get to a place where we felt we'd done justice to what Wad and Hamza and Sama had lived through.
And for me, I wasn't expecting that I have all these materials. I knew that I filmed a lot, but I really shocked off everything
all
I had.
All the tiny bits and bobs, and yeah. Like, it was like a mosaic, amazing
was
mosaic.
Like a big
bits.
Mess how I organized these things because like it's very awful. There was no time really to like name all the folder or did like really organized like files for this.
Yeah.
And I still have some like things which is still like missing. But yeah, it was like no one I actually could really like.
Yeah, it was like when we first sat together, we sat for 6 days in Istanbul on the floor of this hotel with Taima, who's Wad's second daughter, like a couple of months old. And we were just, you know, you'd look through this stuff like, 1 minute it would be the most extraordinary scenes of conflict and suffering in the hospital. Next it would be a scene of like Wad cooking a delicious Aleppan meal, you know? Then there'd be like a random shot of a cat or a parrot with like no relation to anything. So yeah.
Actually until the end, 1 week before we finished this, I come to Ed and said, like, look, I have some new footage. Yeah. And he was like want to kill me, like, oh, please stop.
Yeah.
Yes, no more footage, please. Yeah, we've got Well, you know, I've just what a pleasure getting to meet you both and chatting about this important film, and I hope everyone gets to see it, and I'm going to do what I can certainly to make that happen, and I'm looking forward to maybe connecting with you both in hot docs as well.
We'd love that.
I do want to sort of close, and I think it makes sense to sort of close on it's not quite the final shot in the film, because I think, you know, people need to stay for the credits. That's a little shout out too, but sort of the final drone shot, and is that you in walking down the street, or somebody anyway? I mean, it just what a beautiful, profound point of view.
Actually, it's me with Sama, and Hamza was shooting this.
Yeah, Hamza was flying the drone.
With my friend called Mahmoud. So, I've tried to do this in one idea of something, but I didn't do that one. So, but we use it in a very good place in this film.
Yeah.
Well, again, congratulations on a crazy and beautiful film, and what as you said, Edward, about this the raw human experience of it all. I just want to say thanks and congratulations, and we've been talking with Edward Watts and Wad Al Hatib about their new film For Sama. Thanks again to you both.
Thank you so much, David.
See you in Toronto.
See you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.